Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host. Hey, life's a bitch, ain't it? So maybe we need some guiding light. Well, we could always ask our ego. Well, maybe not. So how can we find our way through this rugged terrain of our lives? Well, maybe we can ask somebody who has really seen how rugged it is and has wrote a wonderful book called Indie Spiritualist, How to Become an Independent Spiritualist. It's a no-bullshit exploration of spirituality. I like that. So we're going to talk to the author of Indie Spiritualist, Chris Grasso. Welcome to the show.
Well, thanks so much for having me on today, Peter. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, I'm glad that you could talk about your book. It's really valuable because you found your way the hard way. And I guess a lot of people feel that we're finding our way the hard way. Life is difficult in so many ways. We're all struggling to know ourselves better and to find deeper places that we can resort to. And you really struggled for a long time.
Yeah, I wouldn't say, my story, it's not that it's, the first time you'll ever hear the struggle that, becomes a catalyst for, I guess we could say, redemption in a way. But it's been something. I'm turning 36 this year, and by about half that time almost was spent in pretty heavy active addiction, which again, it's not just my story, but a lot of people's stories. But I think you said something that's really important, is that we all struggle. I mean, it's part of the human condition. We all have our hardships, and the Buddha's first noble truth is that if you're in this life, there's inherently going to be suffering. There's just no way around that.
So. Well, a lot of us think that there's hope, and you were in a place where it was practically no hope. You
True.
Were so deep. I mean, the stories you tell in the book about how dark it was for you for so long, and the depths of self-degradation you went through were really difficult. And
it was, something I still struggle with a little bit today is why I made it through, and I've seen so many others who haven't, who've died for one reason or another, whether it's taking their own life or succumbing, to addictions of various kinds. It definitely got dark. I mean, the last time I was in detox, which was roughly 3 years ago, I ended up there the morning after I'd woken up in a jail cell from a blackout drunk, and it was a very dark time for me. And then, while in that detox, finding out I lost my job of 5 years, which I loved, but they let me go, rightfully so, of course. And also missing my brother's wedding, where I was supposed to be his best man, it was just a really bad time. The first time
I really feel that when you just
yeah,
said
it
that.
Was the first time I felt like the hope had kind of gone out, and I just wasn't going to make it back.
Yeah, and then at the same time, you're looking around at what could pull you out, and you look at a lot of things that don't make sense to you.
Mm.
The book talks a lot about these paths that maybe some people are happy with, the more traditional paths of spirituality and religion that might save a lot of people.
Right.
But not you.
This is a good point. I mean, so I think there's relevance to all of it. It just, I make it very clear in the book that find what works for you and what resonates for you. But in my case, yeah, these things weren't what would do it for me. Prior to that relapse, I'd spent years searching various spiritual paths, as a lot of us do. We kind of, as Ram Dass calls it, spend some time at the spiritual buffet table when we first are interested, and kind of hop from this to that, and Some of it resonated for me. Some of it didn't. Probably a greater portion of it didn't. But that's just because as a teenager, you know, I came up with that kind of alternative counterculture mindset, and I needed to really find my own way through it. And luckily, I feel like I have to this point.
Right. Now, you know, you don't sound like a gruff guy who would be tattooed all over and, you know, this punk rock guy who, you know, it's like, you know, it's, and it's interesting that you come from this very hard background where you do have tattoos all over you.
Yes.
And you love punk rock.
Yeah.
So,
<I do. laughs>
you know, it's you remind me, and you talk about him in the book. There's a guy who's a wonderful spiritual leader named Brad Warner.
Sure, yeah.
And you know him as also a guy who loves punk rock.
Right.
And he's a Zen Buddhist monk who actually teaches all around the world. And he loves to look like a punk rocker also.
Yes, he does. And he's great. And, you know, there's also Noah Levine, who, you know, is the author of Dharma Punk. So, you know, they kind of came before me. And yeah, if someone's judging a book by a cover, you would never probably imagine any of the three of us, what we do kind of for a living is talk about spiritual living. Yet, you know, I think that's a real sign of the times. And it's a beautiful thing to see happening. I mean, you probably won't see most of us on the New York Times bestseller list next to some of like the rock and roll superstar spiritual teachers, but I can't speak for them, but I don't think that's what they are interested in, nor am I. Like, we really want to be at the ground level helping these people that are having that trouble connecting with some aspects of popular spirituality. And we give it raw, you know, because that's what our upbringing was. And, you know, and I know it's kind of funny when you said that I sound like a bit gentler, let's say, than what you'd imagine. But I think for me, that's what, you know, the hard times are what cultivated a softening in my heart. You know, I've always been kind of gentle-natured, but, you know, going through and hitting those rock bottoms like I did. And, you know, Jack Kornfield, who's a great, great Buddhist teacher, wrote a nice endorsement for my book. And I don't remember verbatim, but it said something like, you awaken your true spirit by way of the broken heart. And that, for me, resonated as complete truth.
Well, some of your stories about the ways that you were almost killing yourself, sleeping on swords.
Well, yeah, kitchen knives, right? But
kitchen knives.
Almost for swords.
Yeah, right. I mean, that's saying, I wonder if I'll wake up in the morning. And
yeah.
Maybe these kitchen knives in my bed will play some havoc with me.
Yeah, I mean, that's just the place I was at, you know, and I want to let your listeners know, like, I share these stories, but I definitely don't share them in a way that's, you know, gratuitous or, you know, trying to say, hey, look at what I did. I really want people that aren't familiar, you know, with the depths of how deep addiction can really go to get a picture of it, because, you know, others have gone even deeper than I have, and a lot of others haven't gone as deep as I have. So, you know, this is just one man's story, but it's a horrifying thing, you know, not only for me, but also for my family and friends, and it's awful. But
right.
Again, like I said, it can become a catalyst to change your life if you're able to find your way through it.
I think that's the point. You know, I was very moved by some of the terrible things you talked about in the book, and how painful it must be for just the journey that you're on. And I do believe that we do come to this stupid planet for enlightenment.
sure.
And have to find our way amidst craziness. And it is crazy. And even now, I mean, for you, for instance, to walk around with all the tattoos and et cetera, and, you know, the police don't always pass you by.
No. No. And you know, but that's part of, like, what's become part of my practice, you know, is that if others are going to look and judge, you know, based on external appearances, I mean, It is what it is, and it's a good opportunity for me, at least, to remind myself I don't need to feed into whatever my thoughts are telling me, because, you know, sure, sometimes it happens, and my, you know, my thoughts, just like the old conditioning, is like, what are you looking at? And, but, you know, I don't have to feed into it and buy into it. More times than not, there's a spaciousness that kind of comes around that, where I'm able to take a step back and kind of identify more with the witness that's aware of those thoughts rather than the thoughts themselves. And so, you know, I can just smile at the person and let them look. Or, you know, I write about an instance last year where an officer was harassing my wife and I, you know, in a very rural area. And, you know, I didn't end up in jail, so that was the payoff, and I was great, whereas the younger Chris probably would have. So, you know, I have my good days and my bad days, but, you know, on there's more good than bad today.
That's great. And you know, there's a strength that this comes from, of you needing to be true to yourself, which is why the book is called Indie Spiritualist, because you're not here to give up your individuality, and yet you're seeking the oneness.
Right. It's the dual house within the non-dual, one could say, I suppose.
Right, exactly. You know, we treasure our unique spark of God, and yet it's painful sometimes to be that.
Right. It is. It's almost, you know, contradictory in a way. But, I mean, I think it's important for people to, especially, you know, I wrote this book primarily with the younger generation seekers in mind. I do feel it's applicable for anyone interested in spirituality or addiction recovery and so on. But, you know, it is important for us to also to really find what resonates for us on the path and practice. And, you know, for some people that will look like a sangha, or a yoga studio or a church, and for other people it might look like hiking in nature, or, you know, bringing some mindfulness when you're skateboarding or playing a sport. So really, you know, I try to nail the point in the book that it's about experience, because that's the truest, you know, the truest thing any of us will have to go on is our own experience. So,
but you use perspective, and that's very helpful. You know, you talk about judgment from the spiritual world, because here you're seeking spirituality, and then if you walk into a yoga studio, you know, you might not be dressed right.
Right.
And everybody frowns.
Yes. And so, I mean, here it's, you know, I can say this about spiritual people, but it's probably true anywhere else. But, you know, some of the most absolute beautiful, compassionate, loving, friendly people I've ever met, I've met through, you know, various spiritual circles. But to be honest, some of the most judgmental, grumpy, kind of negative people I've ever met are also spiritual practitioners, you know, from various sects, and people have been with it for a long time. And they get a very concrete idea of what it's supposed to look like. And if what you're doing or how you look doesn't, you know, mesh with that, then, you know, you're doing something wrong. And that, to me, is crazy. But, you know, that's what people like Brad and Noah and I are trying to reach people, you know, like us, and, you know, to let them know it's not like that all the time. Mm-hmm. And you know, and you can cultivate a spiritual life in a way that works for you and really change things for the better.
That's why your book is such a treasure, because it allows people, and I felt it too. I mean, I've tried to live a grounded life, and yet I've always been different, and it's been painful to be that different. I'm a practicing intuitive, and a lot of people just don't respect me for the alternative life that I've led, and
sure.
So it has been extremely painful in many ways when people are judgmental and act out. And so reading your book is just, you know, it went to my heart that you know, I identified with this idea that you know, it just strengthens the spirit to hear your story and to understand how we can all hold our spirits and be more impervious to the smaller world.
Yeah, and that's key, you know, finding that and then allowing that to become that interconnectedness, you know, where we start to drop some of these boundaries we're setting up and the illusion of separation and, you know, as Ken Wilber would call it, going from egocentric to world-centric, you know, to going from me and mine to, you know, how, what can I do to benefit all of us and, you know, in my life? You know, like the bodhisattvas who take the vows to gain enlightenment, not for themselves, but, you know, to help all beings, all sentient beings. And that's a pretty noble endeavor. And, but one need not take, you know, necessarily a bodhisattva vow in order to start doing that and just, you know, being a more compassionate person to the world at large.
Right. And what's interesting is that enlightenment isn't like hard glue.
It, right.
You know, it has to be refreshed all the time.
We have
to keep reminding ourselves and recovering our wholeness amidst all of this, you know, fractured energy on this planet.
Yeah, most definitely. And I mean, what more can a human do, really, than to be aware of that and to start working with that? Another thing, I'd read from Ken Wilber a while ago. He's become a dear friend along this path, and I've learned so much from him. And he talks about, you know, this life, the material portion of life, at least, you know, is kind of all of it coming from spirit, yet it's, you know, it's spirit awakening to spirit. So when we start to look at the material things, the people, et cetera, and kind of look at them as ornaments of that spirit, you know, it becomes easier to really start to honor, you know, their, I don't want to use a corny cliche word, but, you know, their sacredness, you know, that it's kind of the best way I can think of describing it. But
yeah.
They
also help us because it's this journey that we're on that we have to go deeper for.
Right.
And we wouldn't feel like we needed to go as deep as we do if it wasn't for the pain. And to find out how to, you know, live beyond the pain, and so to do that is the reward of the pain is because once you can get beyond it, the glory of the light feels so much more precious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, Ram Dass once said something to the effect of suffering is the sandpaper of our lives. You know, it does its work of kind of shaping us. And I really loved when I read that, because how true, at least in my experience, you know. And of course, there was plenty of unnecessary suffering that I experienced. But, you know, through cultivating my own spiritual paths and experiences, a lot of that unnecessary suffering I don't have to subject myself to anymore today. And life is what it is, you know. And we learn to stop telling stories about the situations and start seeing the situations as they are, which is just a situation.
Yeah, and I like what you said in the book about that, because
yeah.
You look back and you try to explain yourself to yourself, and you say, now why and what and what, you know, and then you look back and what I like is that you said, and no, I was just insane.
Yes.
And
it doesn't always have to be crystal clear. Sometimes, yes, it's as simple
my headset
as I was just literally out of my mind at that time.
Okay, I'm sorry. Now I can hear myself again. So, but it's really that we don't have to explain everything. You
right.
know, we can just forgive ourselves and say, I was just insane.
Yeah.
You know, I was crazy. I can't explain it, but I can forgive it. Yeah, go ahead.
Now, I was going to say forgiveness is huge. You know, it's really huge. And particularly, at least for me, learning to forgive myself, which has been the most difficult part of all of this. But it's something, you know, I get better at with each day. But yeah, forgiveness and love, like, I mean, all these, like, cliche things that sometimes people kind of like get turned off by hearing, but it's kind of funny that no matter what, no matter who you are, what path you're on, like it seems that it always comes back to that same core message of love and forgiveness and unity and oneness, you know, and that's, you know, at least for me, the core of what really warms my heart center are those kind of those teachings and that message.
Well, one thing you talk about in the book is that it's so much easier to feel that way towards others. To see
yeah.
people who are in pain in the world or people who express love and richness and feel it, and it's wonderful. And you look out, and then you turn inward, and you can't feel the same thing for yourself.
It's something I'd actually. I was interviewing Jai Utal, as a matter of fact, a wonderful kirtan musician out in Colorado a few years ago, and he was sharing candidly about how he experiences that same thing. He still to this day has a hard time with the self-acceptance and self-love, and that was really important for me to hear, because here was this man, you know, who I definitely admire and I know is a very sincere bhakti practitioner, which is a form of yoga in India. And he still struggles with it, you know. So for me to hear that from someone who has a sincere path and still struggles with it, it gave me a sense of lightness that, okay, you know, like, I'm not unique in what I'm going through, and I'm not alone. And it, you know, we do the best we can each day to work with it. Some days will be better than others, but we just, you know, we work on finding that love and compassion for ourselves and the wreckage of our past, I guess you could say.
Yeah, I guess we can't build bubbles around people call them pure, because when you get to know them, you find that everyone is insecure in one form or another and struggles with finding self. And a lot of people aren't awake and are just bumping around, and that doesn't mean that they're not suffering. It's just that they're not struggling the way some of us struggle to find answers.
Right, right. The autopilot kind of syndrome, right?
Yeah, a lot of people aren't seeking the answers the way you and I have. And so, but also I like the fact that you have connected with some brilliant minds who are well-known teachers. And they're not just famous people, you know, who maybe all have the same thing to say and they're famous, but they actually, you can hear them express their hearts.
Yeah.
And
yeah. And yeah, connecting with them and being able to, you know, whether I had interviewed them or they had interviewed me, or, you know, I was able to get them a manuscript and they actually took the time to read it and write a nice endorsement. You know, for someone like myself who loves to second guess himself and is, you know, still does struggle a bit with that self-assurance and whatnot, that was huge for me, because, you know, these people were the ones that were the teachers on my path, you know, the ones that really helped me awaken my heart and open my mind and really get on with the healing that I needed to do. So to connect with them and work with them in whatever capacity and have their support, I mean, when I saw Ram Dass post last week about my book, you know, came out last week, and he posted about it on his Facebook page, that was just crazy to me. You know, like, 3 years ago, I'm waking up in a jail cell pretty much ready to die, and you know, here I am, and one of the great, great teachers of my life and of many people's lives is supporting me, you know, publicly. It was just, and you know, that's not like an ego, like, hey, look at me, and I have the support. That was a sincere heart, like, wow, things in life can change, and you know, like, people are really able to affect other people and to make a difference and to change.
Right.
Like I said, so.
And we should work towards making it a better world and add that to our list of things that we can be grateful for about ourselves and love ourselves better, because we are seeking higher goals.
Yeah, for sure.
And yet, there's also that part that shouldn't mean anything. That doesn't have to do with measuring an ego and saying, am I spiritual enough yet? Have I done enough good yet? Maybe I'm not good enough yet.
Old trap. I mean, that's where, you know, Chogyam Trungpa's Cutting Through Spiritual Materialism book. I recommend that to pretty much anyone, you know, because it, on the one hand, it helps us to see our own kind of narcissism in our spiritual pursuits. And, you know, I honestly think most, if not all of us, have it to some degree. You know, just the words like self-help alone is we're trying to better ourself, you know, the small self, which is fine, though, because we need to do that before we can really connect with that larger self, you know, where it all becomes nothing, you know, and it's Nothing in a negative way, but nothing in a really liberating way.
And then the ultimate is to surrender to the thou art that.
Yes, Tatmamasi, exactly.
Yeah, and you do a lot of good in the book about understanding how when all is one, that there is no right and wrong, that everything is the journey to the light, and we can't make anyone wrong, because who knows, tomorrow they might be right.
Right.
Not about what they're saying necessarily today. We might never agree with them, but there might be transformation in ways that we can hold everyone together better.
Yeah. And I think, you know, having the principle of living and let live is so important. Like, honor whatever your faith or tradition is, whether it's Christian or Buddhist or Hindu or atheist. You know, I have a lot of wonderful atheists and agnostic friends that are some of the most spiritual and loving, compassionate people I know. But honor whatever works for you. But, you know, live and let live. You know, just because it works for you, it doesn't mean it is the only way. You know, and I think it's great to see a lot of younger people getting interested in spirituality. And with that, I think also there's been a bit of a shift in certain traditions. I know a lot of younger Christians, some of my very close friends who can call themselves Christian, but, you know, they're open to teachings from people like the Buddha. You know, they won't call themselves Buddhist, they'll still say I'm Christian, but they're able today to recognize, wow, there was some great stuff the Buddha said, and some of it was pretty close to what Jesus said, and you know, and vice versa, and you know, Buddhists accepting what Jesus says, you know, it's just a really beautiful thing to see that, you know, so find out what works for you through your own experience, become your own spiritual scientist, and you know, but just be open-minded and open-hearted to others on their path as well.
Yeah, it's so important to be that openness. For instance, how many of us have been closed to Catholicism? It's been so rigid, and now there's a new pope who's talking a new language.
Yes, I mean, how amazing is what he's doing? It's the skeptic in me is kind of waiting for the other shoe to drop. Like, this is right. Too good to be true. Come on. But I mean, for right now, how amazing. Like, what he's saying and doing, it's profound and absolutely necessary and absolutely beautiful. So yeah, you never know. You never know what tomorrow will bring.
Right, and that's the point, is that keep the faith.
Yeah.
And live in surrender. And no, it's beautiful. And I love the book. I really appreciated feeling it and identifying, not you know, to the depth that you had to go, but certainly with the individuality, the sense of we have to be true to ourselves and finding ourselves amidst this difficult journey that we're all on.
Well, yeah, thanks, Peter. I really appreciate that. And you know, the nice thing is that, though, you know, my suffering was related more to a, you know, specific drug and alcohol addiction. You know, something I like to share with people just really quickly is that I had interviewed Father Thomas Keating some years ago, and I'd mentioned to him, if you don't know, or the listeners don't know, he's a wonderful Trappist monk in the lineage of Thomas Merton, who was just a beautiful author before he passed. But I mentioned it to Thomas Keating that I was in recovery, and he kind of laughed, and I was like, well, I'm in recovery too, but I'm in recovery from the human condition. You know, so
right.
We're all united levels, in that.
Right, different levels of human condition. So Chris Grosso, thank you so much for being a guest on Energy Stew.
And my pleasure. Thanks for your time, Peter.
Well, I'm glad to work with you, talk with you, feel with you, express with you. It's wonderful. And your book is called Indie Spiritualist. It's just out, and people should be looking for it. And thank you so much for being on the show.
My pleasure. Thank you for your time, and take good care.
Thank you. You too. And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at PRN.FM. I can be reached at peter@heartriver, heartriver.org, or 212-222-7748. I'd love to hear from you, and thank you so much for listening.